And welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. Each week, we'll be joined by guests from the financial services world to discuss the most pressing industry issues. I'm Amy Austin, news editor at FT Advisor, and today I will be discussing the FCA's Dear CEO letter to platform businesses with Ben Hammond, consulting director at the Landcap, and Verona Kenny, managing director of intermediary at 7IM. So, well, welcome to you both for joining us today, and thanks for being on.
Hi, Amy.
So to kind of get into what we're going to be having a chat about today, earlier this month, the FCA wrote to platform bosses raising concerns about the fees charged to customers and some poor tech, like which were leading to delays. So to kind of get started, the regulator thinks that platform fees are not really properly being disclosed, which then makes it hard for customers to judge the value of the products they are then paying for. And they kind of said that, you know, this may not represent fair value, especially looking at customers with different size investment pots and taking into regard platform's role in the distribution chain. So, Ben, I thought maybe we can start with you because I know that you slightly disagreed with the regulator's whole stance on fees.
I think overall, you know, what they're trying to achieve is absolutely fine. There was just one line in there about, which I sort of partly agree with, about them not being properly disclosed. I think most firms, most platforms, most, you know, other firms in our industry do get it right. There's always going to be one or two on the edges who are maybe being a little bit less transparent, but I think that overall transparency is the key thing. It's just the letter maybe suggested there was more than not, or they were focusing on that a little bit too much in my area. In my opinion, I think it got a lot better. We still get quite a lot of percentage based numbers, and there's been a big push to say, okay, that's fine, but then what does that mean in pounds and pence? And again, that's got much better. There's regulations that sort of sit behind all that stuff now. So I think it's got better. I think it's not as, maybe not quite as bleak as the FCA maybe think out there. But the other thing is about, maybe just being, you could be even more upfront and say, well, here's a one price you'll pay type model might be a next step as well. So perhaps moving away from the percentage or ad valorem based charging and saying, some more fixed fee type things. And I know we've had that a little bit in platforms and it never really took off. There's not really anything around at the moment, but you get quite a lot of that sort of thing in an advisor, in the advisor world as well. Some more sort of fixed fee planning and that sort of thing. So maybe that's what the FCA are thinking. Maybe that's, where they're trying to push people.
Sure. And Verona, what did you kind of think about their whole opinion on fees?
Yeah, well, I suppose at 7am, we're quite simple folk here and we like to keep it simple. And I think the concern the FCA has is there's many different fees and some can apply if there's a full moon and some can apply at other times. And it is just about how that's explained to a client. But I think, one of the key points is bringing it to life to a client. And I think this is where the disclosure and the illustrations and the explanation is so important, so a client knows exactly what they're going to get charged when. Now, as I just said, we're quite simple folk at 7am. We always look at our fees. We streamlined our fees in February, and we basically have one platform fee that covers just about everything. So it helps me. I only have to remember one set of numbers, which, as I said, is a great help.
Yeah. And how kind of do you think consumer duty has played a role in this? Do you think this is why, the FCA has now kind of honed in on this and had a look? Or do you think that this was kind of a long time coming anyway?
Oh, to be fair, I think consumer duty has brought everything to the fore. I don't think that's the sole reason that they're looking at this. But it goes back to not just what the fee is, but how is it explained? How is it disclosed? Which is really leading, can a consumer pick up whatever they're looking at and understand it? And that is the most important question, whether the fee is a sliding fee, an ad valorem fee, a flat fee. It is just about, can I understand it easily?
Sure. And Ben, what do you think in terms of...
I completely agree with that. I think that sort of the add-on there is about proving value for money. So yeah, absolutely. As Verena says, you know, the transparency, the simple way of looking things. Here's a number. You know, it's easy to understand for everyone. You know, customer, consumer, us, the advisor, everyone. But also, what are you actually getting for that fee as well? So again, it comes down to the transparency of saying, well, here's what you're paying. Great, that seems like good value. But is value not cheapest? You know, paying a little bit more for getting a little bit more, but being absolutely clear for the, you know, the advisor and to the end client what that is overall what's important. So I don't think the FCA are saying, you know, everything needs to be cheaper. Maybe they are in a way, because some things might look a little bit expensive, but the consumer needs to know they're getting what they pay for, basically, and the regulator is there to make sure that that's absolutely clear and transparent to them.
Sure. And how easy do you think it is to kind of like get fees correct? Because we've obviously seen recently, you know, SJP have come out and said, oh, we're going to change our fees. And, you know, their share price like plummeted kind of over the weekend with this. It's kind of, you know, it's that kind of thing. Like what is the right level for your own firm and what people then can understand?
Yeah, I think if we go down the SJP story, I think that's a whole series of podcasts on donating, so we won't go there. But I think it comes back to what you're getting for your money and is it value. And you know, the SJP, if you take the SJP proposition, they're obviously doing something right. You know, it's grown to a certain size. It's getting a little bit more focus for various reasons at the moment, which is where all the stories and everything have come from. But yeah, there's got to be a mixture of propositions and you know, other areas of the market for that wide range of clients that we have. So I think, you know, everything that people are looking at the moment, cost of living crisis and everything else, you know, post-pandemic stuff, there's been a lot of change in the last few years. We are where we are with, you know, high inflation and all that sort of thing. So people are looking a bit more carefully at what they're getting, and then again looking at the numbers, it comes back to the value for money piece as well, and ultimately that's consumer duty, and you know, that underpins all that.
Sure,
I'd absolutely agree with that, and I just keep coming back to just make it as simple, transparent, and easy to understand as possible.
Sure. And do you find that kind of, you know, clients really have a big focus on fees? Is that kind of something that they would look at? And do you find it sometimes hard to be as a like a platform and as a provider kind of being like, you know, our fees are X, but this is how we provide the value? Like, is it hard to show that, or do you find that clients kind of get it?
No, I think the clients do understand it. Hopefully it is because we're putting it in a really clear way in both a digital and a paper format that people can understand. I think the challenge, and this is also being part of consumer duty, is it's, you know, at the same time that a client's looking at the service that we're providing as a platform, they're also looking at the investment service, whether that is investment management or discretionary management. They're also looking at the advisory costs and also the platform costs. And maybe there's also some other product costs in as well. So the client has to understand, you know, I'm getting all of these different services and the different costs associated with each of those.
Sure. And just moving on now, looking at other aspects of the letter, because, you know, it wasn't all focused on fees. There were other problems in there. So they kind of mentioned, you know, the whole tech stuff and that maybe, you know, replatforming doesn't always go as well as we think. Ben, starting with you, do you think there are still concerns about, you know, when platforms say, oh, we're going to have a replatform or we're going to change this, and whether the kind of unstable tech maybe can hold it, or do you think we've moved past that stage?
I don't think we've moved past it, but we've definitely moved on.
Yeah.
You know, if you think back to, I was thinking about things like TSB and, you know, other, you know, more retail focused, or maybe, you know, the average consumer would have a lot more understanding of, because they're the big high street brands. But certainly in our industry, you know, if you look back to say 5 years ago and what happened with Aviva, and then there's things that's happened with Aegon and Core, you know, and all the ones, all the replatformings or transformations, or whatever you want to call them, that have taken a long, long time, I think we've got better at doing that. So, you know, learning from previous, sort of, don't like to say mistakes, but previous issues, you know, that's, as long as we're doing that and we're learning from that, I think that's going in the right direction. There are still a few out there. Maybe things aren't sort of, you know, quite going to timeline and to plan. And the other thing that was in the letter was about, you know, sort of the operational resilience side of that as well. So it's not just about, and this is another, you know, another regulatory angle that's been around for a while, but it's not just about big movements of data and bashing two firms together and all the PE money that we're seeing in the industry, et cetera. But it is also about being able to just manage a stable business in a stable way as well. And the technology that underpins that is going to be a big part of that world as well. So it's not just about the change. It's about once that's done, or even starting a new business, how are you running your business in a in an operationally resilient way? So it's nice and stable.
Sure.
I'd back that up. You know, everyone does focus on these big platform migrations and everything. But for most firms, that's a point in time. I think actually what's critically important is to make sure that platforms are investing in the operational resilience, because that is should be setting up the platform for the short, medium and long term to make sure that there's not things like outages which are unexpected or can't be explained away, because they're the things that, you know, will really impact an end client.
Yeah. Because I guess that if an advisor is kind of, you know, midway through something and then the platform's just like, boom, gone, I think that's where the reputational damage comes in more than anything, you know, then they're like, because as we all know, you know, it's made known when something goes wrong with a platform. It's not kept secret. You know, we do see it happen. We report on it, for example, you know, we see it. So how do you kind of deal with that, Verona? Like, what would you say the best way to deal with, you know, these tech issues may be?
Yeah, I just put it all under that heading of operational resilience, because it is sometimes easy that firms may blame the tech, but it's actually, you know, do you have an operating model that has, you know, backup systems that can handle ups and downs in volumes in trading? You know, that's what's really important, because, of course, on a Friday afternoon, that's probably the best time that you don't want to just test your operational resilience, but then you want to test your operational resilience when you know, you know, you're going to have peak traffic, peak volumes, to make sure that, you know, you never miss a beat on that.
Yeah, sure. And another thing that the FCA was looking about was on like transfer times and why, you know, maybe it can take a bit longer to transfer from one platform to another. Verona, I don't know if you want to kick us off on that one.
No, I do. You know, this is something, and I've got to be honest, you know, I'm bored of talking about transfer times. I feel like I've been in the industry so long, like seriously, dinosaurs are walking the earth. And we've been talking about transfer times since then. And I just think, you know, firstly, you know, this is a poor reflection of us as an industry that we've not got our act together on this. You know, I hear some of the transfer times, and as I said, like, I'm so old, I don't have time for transfers. I don't have enough, you know, time to worry about the transfers are going to be taking so long. You know, we've got to get our act together. Saying that, we've had lots of initiatives, and some of them have been, you know, really gotten behind by the industry. So, for example, we've got Star Initiative. It's got 80 members. You know, the end goal is that transfers should be taking place within 14 days. And I just think the whole industry, you know, not going to shout out one provider, but the industry just needs to really get behind that and to reach that goal. And 14 days, that shouldn't be, you know, at Nirvana. We should be striving for it to be even quicker than that. And that's what we've got to be focused on.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess that, you know, this is another thing, another reputational risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, absolutely. Because when clients want something, they, you know, they want it quickly.
Yeah, and so they should.
Yeah. And Ben, I don't know if you had anything to add on that.
Completely agree with that. But yeah, I'd probably add, yeah, it could still happen quicker, because even something in 14 days is not that quick. You know, you could switch your whole current account in much quicker than that. And I know that's a very slick service that's been developed over many years, but as Verona says, we've been talking about, you know, transfers for as long as I can remember. And certainly when there were, you know, a certain set of rules that came in with RDR and everything else. But a lot of firms are still kind of pushing back against that, or just haven't got it quite right yet. So I think the initiatives are absolutely good. And say, as you say, Star was mentioned in the Dear CEO letter as well, that there's others out there, such as, you know, Ticertex and others that have been around for 10 plus years. But yeah, you know, you could do a transfer theoretically in, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes if all the systems are plugged together and all the data is in the right place. That's a, you know, that's probably the best situation. But there's pension transfers and others that, you know, you read stories of them being around, you know, 6+ months sometimes. And it's, as an industry, it's just not good enough. We need to do a lot better. So I think it's going in the right direction, but it's moving a bit too slowly. The regulator's not got as involved as they could have done to date. There's the investments platforms market study, if I've got my plurals right, that came out, and there was a lot of drivers there. So I think this is the next step to push platforms and other firms in the right direction, but they might come down even a little bit harder. Let's just wait and see how the industry responds, I think. So,
yeah. And do you think the kind of whole naming and shaming in this area works? Because, you know, we do get sent, you know, the lists of this person's the best, this person's worst, and this month. And, you know, not to, again, name any names, but there is one provider that is always at the top of the list. And the day I see that change will be quite welcome. But do you think, you know, that practice does work? Because a provider will sit back and go, oh, God, yeah, we probably should be quicker then.
Yeah, what I would say is that it's really sad that we even have to be saying naming and shaming. Like, as an industry, we should all think that is just so embarrassing that we're at this point. At the same time, you know, we all want to speed up the transfers. So going back to that STAR initiative, so we got a gold award for the personal pension, for SIP, for SAS transfers, which is fantastic. But we need everybody to be at that gold standard, because otherwise it's like us having the one mobile phone. You know, we need everybody to have, you know, mobile phones so that we can move this data around, so that we can do the right thing by the client. I don't want to be sitting here saying, oh, hooray, we're gold, good on us, if it's not actually helping us, because we're trying to deal with that one particular firm that you're maybe alluding to that has, let's just say, pretty bad transfer times.
Yeah. And was there anything else kind of in the letter of note, Ben, that we should maybe have a look at?
It's probably covered the main parts. I think there was one other smaller bit. Very might have some other comments on this around non-standard assets as well. But I think I'll say it's not gone away. You still read some stories, and there are still, I mean, it comes back to some of the transformations and the replatforming, so to speak. Some of, you know, the older platforms are, you know, maybe taken on different assets in the past and, you know, come unstuck on occasion. But there's not too much of that sort of thing around at the moment. But again, in this day and age and where we are and everything else, I can see why the regulator is saying, well, that we might be in a much better situation. But we're still getting alerted to things, and we're still having to maybe pay compensation. That's why they don't, the FSCS do, but compensation to certain types of client invested in certain things, and companies have gone bust and all that sort of stuff. So I think they're just trying to sort of, you know, limit the risk, limit the liability there.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. And remember, this non-standard assets, especially on SIP provider front, has been a concern with the FCA for some time, and they're doing the read across to platforms, which is the right thing to do.
Yeah. And kind of to wrap this up, because I think we've kind of discussed the most pressing points here, where do you think the FCA is going to go with this? Do you think that platforms are going to be looked into, you know, a bit more closely now? Are they going to be doing, you know, reviews, or was this just a letter to be like, look, we're aware of this, we're looking into it, be warned kind of thing?
I don't think platforms have been under the FCA radar. You know, they're rightly pointed out in the letter that, you know, we are a really important part of the whole ecosystem, value chain, whatever we want to call it. I think there's over 80 billion that is on platforms, so it's not like we were under the radar. So rightly, the FCA is looking at platforms and will continue to do so.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. And as we've discussed, I think there's two or three particular things they're going to keep an eye on, transfers being one of them. Anything under consumer duty, but in particular that value for money or fees and charges, and maybe some of the non-standard assets. But I think that's a bit of a tertiary thing for them. But as Verona says, you know, not not flying under the radar, you know, 800 plus billion or whatever, depending on which number you look at as to what's going on. And then some of the operational resilience stuff, you know, anything that underpins that, and a lot of issues, you know, various sort of, you know, hacking things and cybersecurity issues and that sort of thing. That sort of, again, it comes into operational resilience. That's all come out a little bit more in recent months as well. So I think they're just going to be keeping a very close eye, but then also around some of the funding that's in the industry as well. So because you've got some of the amalgamation of platforms and, you know, to create these, you know, much bigger companies, they are, you know, need to have a lot more resilience, and maybe there's higher risk levels there as well. Certainly going to, you know, have the FCA, have a hotline to the FCA with what's going on there as well. So a lot of, you know, every platform CEO, I'm sure it's the same for you, Brian, every platform CEO I talk to is like, yeah, but I talk to the FCA once or twice a week, most weeks, because there's always something happening, even if it's just the regulator ringing them up for an opinion on what they've heard or something like that. So very much an integral part of the industry now.
I think that's a good thing. We want to have that two-way relationship.
Completely agree, yeah.
Brill. Well, I guess we watch this space and see what comes out next. Well, Ben, Verona, thank you so much for joining us this week. And tune in next week where we will discuss other goings-on in the industry.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.